to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hang on, start again.
294.
Hello, welcome to episode 294 of the slightly peaky Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb. I'm a good pal, Sean Orford. We're huddled over a radiator, aren't we?
Yeah, it's freezing.
We're in the conference room.
It's nearly as cold here as it is in my house.
It's a bit chilly there too, isn't it?
Yeah,
super cold. Like my watch is saying, oh, 1 degree now. It said minus two when I set off this morning.
Yeah, it was. I literally took me about 20 minutes to sort my car out this morning.
Yeah,
actually. Get the ice off. And
I had to go out and... my wife couldn't even open the doors on all
yeah, yeah.
So I had to go out and help. I had to climb in the boot, shove the doors open, and then I obliged and did the gentlemanly thing and de-iced the car, and it's good fun.
You know your place, in the boot.
Good fun though. We'll be talking about mistakes and getting things wrong today. We'll talk about some grand, horrendous mistakes that people have made, and maybe a few lighter, wittier ones, like when I threw a cricket ball in a woman's face. More on that later on. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look at all the show notes and links from this episode, all previous episodes too, and sign up to our mailing list, and you'll get weekly alerts, free meditation files, loads of other stuff, eh?
Yeah.
You should do that a bit one day.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing that for blooming...
Years.
I don't know why I look at my watch.
Yeah.
5 odd years I've been saying that stuff.
Yeah, so you say, how old are you? And then you look at your watch.
Yeah. How are you doing? What have you been up to?
What am I doing? Movies.
Movies, oh
movies.
Yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody, amazing.
Yeah, very cool.
And then the Mary Queen of Scots one.
Oh, is that the... What's it called? The Greatest? No, there's something... Is it the one where she's been nominated for an Oscar, or am I thinking of another one?
I haven't got a clue, but it was very good.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of another one, especially I forgot. Anyway, it was good, that one.
It was very good, yeah. And it was much more, makes you realise how kind of sanitised a lot of drama is on TV. It's very kind of real and earthy.
It's brutal and...
Yeah, more like how life kind of actually is.
Or was even, I mean, in that era, you do see period dramas and stuff from that era. Look, I don't know, you almost get the sense that it doesn't give you a sense of what life was like in that era when pre-central heating, I'm talking about, you know, that life was cold and wet and damp and dark, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Even if you were the Queen.
Yeah.
Mary Queen of Scots.
Life was hard.
Life was hard, but life is suffering, man. I keep writing that down in my little notebooks as
I'm bleeding here.
Yeah. Cut yourself shaving, eh?
Yeah, I was trying to cut my throat, but it was a bit high.
I'm in a movie mode at the moment because it's cold and I'm wearing it in the house all the time.
Yeah.
And I've rediscovered my Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because Will's old enough to appreciate them now and the subtleties of the story and all the characters.
Yeah.
And those, they're officially my favourite films ever.
Yeah.
They're just amazing.
Yeah, they are good.
The story, my word. I mean, I need to read the books again, really, to kind of get that real sense of depth.
Yeah, the book is good. But they brought the book out, all the three books, in one big, fat paperback years ago. It was amazing.
I was trying to decide, and been speaking with Will, which is my favourite of the three films and the three books. And I don't know, it's one story, isn't it? So,
What about The Hobbit?
Well, that's what I'm going to read that soon with William.
Yeah.
As a book, that's brilliant because it's snappy. But the movies, I don't really want to watch them with him because the movies were bloated and they made it into a trilogy, The Hobbit, and it's a small story, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Amazon Prime or whatever have got the rights to the Lord of the Rings world, and they're doing a box set series of other stories around Lord of the Rings, I think. So, telling you the history of Gandalf and all that.
My mother used to read The Hobbit. Once a year, every year.
Really?
In the winter, she'd sit down and read The Hobbit.
Wow.
It was her thing.
It's amazing. I mean, how someone can create a world like that.
Yeah.
Tolkien.
Yeah.
In his head. And then, if you think about the creative effort to create those movies, and all the detail in it, it's just unreal. Apparently, they built the set for the Shire in New Zealand a year before filming. so that the plants could grow and it would look real. It would look real and lived in, rather than, you know, spick and span and new. So they built this thing, this world, a year before filming, and then just let it grow and, you know, tended the gardens and grew food. And
if you look at a lot of the language that he uses, his names, a lot of them is. A lot of them is Welsh Gaelic kind of language.
Yeah.
So like Gwaedir, is eagle in Welsh, and it's eagle in...
Beautiful. Yeah, my mate's just had a kid, a lad, and they haven't named it yet as of 2 days after he was born, and I've been watching Lord of the Rings, so yeah, I was saying you should call him Aragorn or Eomer, or there's some really cool names, man. Mistakes. What prompted this one, Sean? Because you've written a blog, haven't you?
It's something that I deal with a lot, from all different kinds of angles, and have done over the years professionally. I was kicked into this one by working with somebody who was very distressed and may actually be in a bit of bother. It's all happening at the moment because they hit somebody in their car because they'd looked down at the phone. And then when they looked up, there was an old lady in front of them, and they hit the old lady in the road. Who survived, didn't die, but could have done. And the person, it was the perpetrator, is completely mortified by what they did. Yeah.
I mean... I'm Mr. Road Safety, so I'm going to keep a level head on this one and, like, you know, not be quick to judge. But, I mean, we're talking here about issues such as forgiveness of ourselves and forgiveness. Ultimately, I guess, an incident like that, regardless of kind of criminal prosecutions and all that stuff, the person that was hit needs to forgive the person that did it to them. Hit the lady or the older person needs to forgive themselves.
Yeah, it's multi-layered, and very often it starts off with the person who's the perpetrator in a situation very often blames the person that they damaged, blames something else.
Yeah, well, I see this all the time in my, like, road safety quest stuff. It's like victim blaming all the time, specifically like cyclists and pedestrians. Like, they shouldn't have stepped in the road, they shouldn't have done this, they shouldn't have done that. Putting all that aside... the initial trauma of the incident for the person that's hit the lady with her car. Mm. How long does it take to kind of get through that initial shock?
It just depends. When I worked in the prison service, I had people that had accidentally been involved in criminal negligence that had resulted sometimes in multiple deaths or multiple damage, and they'd been imprisoned for it. And that can be a hugely, hugely difficult issue for the people who are the culprits. Sorry about this beeping.
Yeah, millions of things
coming in from the Middle East on my iPad.
Mistakes going all over, popping off all over the place. I mean, the trauma of something like that is going to take an initial while to recover from before you can even start thinking about processing it, I assume.
There are all kinds of issues that come up in it, like this may sound trite, but it, for me, it is very real, because, like I say, I deal with this a lot. It's that good old American thing about we don't have problems here, we have learning opportunities. Okay, now some of these learning opportunities are tough, but can we turn what we've just done or what has just happened, whether we're either the perpetrator or the victim, into a learning situation? You know, can we create some gold out of the lead kind of thing? Can we make it into something which is more positive than just simply, you know, this happened and aren't we all damaged by it? You know, where's the learning?
Yeah. There's a couple of blogs I'm going to link to, and as you have stated there, they all kind of say that you need to use these mistakes as a learning opportunity. That you can't let them swallow you up. You know, you've got to live with the consequences of criminal stuff, possibly. You know, if you've killed people through a mistake, you're probably going to have to serve some time for it, or at least go through a lengthy kind of court legal proceeding, which is going to be
I've worked the other way too with people who have ended up doing something that sometimes did result in death to another person consciously, deliberately, and due to their anger about what had happened, you know, they planned it and did it, and then afterwards realised what they'd done, and then went into the regret penitent phase, which sounds kind of crazy if someone's consciously decided to do something, but it's a bit like they were taken over by the red mist.
Yeah.
You know, and it was only after the event that the red mist lifted, and it was like, oh my God, what have I done? And I've deliberately done it. You know, and so there's a huge confusion inside the person then, because there was a part of them that actively, consciously desired to,
yep,
and wanted to and did, and then once that bit had been spent, there was the bit inside them which was like, oh my God, that's terrible, why have I done that? That's
awful.
That
kind of realisation phase, yeah, kicks in. Yeah, well, I'm fascinated by that kind of. Actually, there's this YouTube channel called Stop a Douchebag or Stop a Douche, and it's a Russian. It's young Russians, and basically they go out onto the streets and they stop dangerous driving. So there's a lot of drivers.
How do they stop them?
Well, they specifically focus on people that drive on pavements. Like, we think we got it bad here. People in Russia will
they
just drive right down the pavement to take a shortcut through traffic.
Well,
I'll show you the videos. There's hundreds of them. They're amazing, and I'm addicted. So these young lads, there's groups of them because they know they're going to be meet kind of quite hostile characters. Will stand in the way of the car and the driver. Polite, be really polite and knock on the window and have a chat. You're driving on the pavement, you know that's illegal, etc. And most of the time, most drivers will say, fine, can I just get off here, then back on the road? And they'll say, no, you've got to reverse all the way back to where you came on. Most will say, okay, and they'll do it because they don't want the confrontation. A small handful will start to scream and shout and like not do as they're told. And that's the point where the young lads have these big stickers that they put on the dashboard, on the windscreen of the car, which says, I don't care about anyone else, I drive how I want. This is a big message. And as soon as that goes on, the red mist comes down on the driver, and they hop out and they take the sticker off, or they try to, because it doesn't peel off easily. And sometimes it will escalate and the police need to be called. But then at that point, usually when the police come, the driver will be sitting there, and they'll come to that realisation that they've been idiots. And it's almost like they've switched character completely and they can't believe how they acted.
Yeah.
So do we just have this inbuilt kind of red mist?
See, I think reaction? That inside everybody there is a saint and a sinner and a murderer and a thief.
Yep.
I think their insight, it's the human personality. It's like which facet.
Yeah, well, I see it as a parent to you, two young boys that are trying to test me and push me all the time on trying to stay up a bit later or watch a bit more iPad or whatever, or take ages getting dressed in the morning for school. They push my buttons, you know, and sometimes I'll lose it a bit and get cross with them and get mad and maybe shove them or that kind of thing. And after the event, I'll think about it and I'll think, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or I shouldn't have said that to them, I shouldn't have got cross, that kind of thing. I should have been calmer. So I'm capable of it too.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people obviously take it way further with disciplining their children.
Yeah.
To the point, like, there's a story a couple of weeks ago where the father-in-law of a kid was really angry with a kid in the back of the car that was sitting in the footwell for some reason and pushed his chair, electric chair, back to kind of shut the kid up. And he was quiet, put it forward again. The kid started screaming, put it back further, killed the child. Red mist to kill a kid. Like it was his girlfriend's son or daughter.
Wow.
Like, they got to live with that.
Yeah.
And this has happened in the last few months, so.
Yeah.
Do we forgive that kind of behaviour, or where do we?
it's hard, isn't it? I mean, I think that if I go back to things like South Africa and Nelson Mandela and him deciding to create the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, the deal was that if you could own up to and be conscious of and regretful for the things that you had done,
yep,
and that you could apologise for those, then okay, you know, it was accepted. And it's easy for, I mean, if you think about Northern Ireland, and for hundreds of years, you've got this vendetta that goes on between the Protestants and the Catholics, you know, generation after generations. At what point do we actually stop that and say, okay, enough's enough?
Yeah, just someone needs to say, hang on a minute, what are we doing? This is crackers.
Yeah, and we should note that a bomb has gone off in Northern Ireland. A car bomb, which was by, I think they're calling themselves the new IRA, I think.
Right, this is in the last week or so, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So could it be coming back again?
It could be. I think we assume things are pretty, there's turmoil politically around the world, and I think we assume in the UK that despite the turmoil that we're all going to be okay.
But, yeah.
And, it's not that easy, is it?
No.
It only takes one little firecracker incident and there's chaos in the streets.
And they're identifying on the news now that with the dreaded Brexit that we don't talk about, that there's an upsurge in right-wing activity in Britain.
Yeah.
And they're expecting it to get worse in the event of there being a Brexit being stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and fascists are unhappy. Yeah. I'm cool with that. You're like, don't do the thing that's going to make them more unhappy, because that means you're heading in the right direction. It may require a little bit of short-term activism and, you know, chucking them off the streets, that kind of thing. Even bricks and baseball bats, maybe. But
and then will you regret this after having done it? Will this be
possibly? Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Sometimes there are points in history of the world where you've got to make a stand up.
Yeah, and I've said before that if there was another Hitler that did what Hitler did, I wouldn't want to, but I'd be prepared to go and fight.
Yeah.
If that's what it took, then I'd sign up with my little tin hat and off I'd go.
Working, if you've worked with like prison inmates, perhaps, or knowledge, are they, what percentage of certain criminal minds are even aware that they've made a mistake, say?
It varies hugely, but when you look at the psychopathic spectrum, that identity of a psychopath being someone who has very little insight, very little empathy, or none at all. So there's a spectrum there, and there are some people in that situation who just carry on doing what they're doing when you let them out anyway. And there are some people who have that. Very often it's a religious conversion, that they have that suddenly realisation that they've done something very, very wrong. And they regret it deeply and don't know what to do with it. And very often the prison chaplain comes into play at that point. Or whatever the religious alternative is, whether it's an imam or...
Yeah.
You know, but that idea that maybe some people get to the point where the only way that they can get over what they've done is to make their peace with God, you know.
Right.
There is a movement in our prison service, which happens in some prisons, where the perpetrator of a crime is required to sit down with people that that they have damaged, and to actually face up to the consequences of what they've done. Yeah. And sometimes, certainly the people that are the victims report finding that really, really useful. Sometimes with the perpetrators, it's water off a duck's back if they're on that psychopathic spectrum. If not, and they actually see the consequences of what they've done, very often that's life-changing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I mean, I was hit on my bike a few months ago. Well,
yeah.
I lived to tell the tale. You know, another 10 centimetres and would have been a very different story. But the chap that hit me with his van... I've been thinking about whether to go and say hello to the company and like not be confrontational at all, just to try and build that empathy, because I see a lot of rage on our roads and they're quite hostile places to be, and not just between people on bikes and drivers, but driver to driver, you know, because you don't have much way to communicate because you're in this metal box, insulated, you've got a horn to communicate with, maybe you flash your lights or you beat your horn, that's all you can do really. And I was trying to think of ways to kind of build empathy between road users. And I think I'd like to go and speak to the person and not be judgmental at all. I can understand why he didn't see me. That's what he's told the police anyway. because I know that when you're driving a vehicle, it's easy to switch off and just start to daydream. And you've got, maybe he was on his way home to see his kids, maybe he's got loads of things on his plate, maybe he's got some kind of health issues that are playing on his mind, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'd like to go and meet him and just shake his hand and say, I forgive you.
Yeah.
Take care. You know, that kind of thing. So that we can all kind of learn from it and grow a little bit.
Yeah.
And hopefully it would be met with kind of a, in the right kind of way, and he wouldn't kind of react and say, what were you doing in my way? That kind of thing. I see, yeah. You know, I'm sure it'd be fine because most people are pretty cool, aren't they?
Yeah.
So do you have any instance where you've got people together, the victim and the perpetrator, and tried to create that?
Only in a lower key sense, in the sense of doing mediation. And sometimes that is between colleagues. Sometimes I was involved in a mediation with some criminal gangs once, which was fun. But the other mediation that I do a lot is with couples, which is like sort of relationship work. It's very easy for your partner or for you to blame each other. You know, so you get a lot of that kind of projection of whose fault is this onto each other, rather than people actually being responsible for what they are.
Mm.
You know, you did this, therefore I'm that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
So I deal with that a lot.
I mean, I've got in the notes here about how, for like sometimes insurance reasons, like legal reasons, it's not advised that you speak to the person that's...
Well, I get that with the doctors, because it, depending on their insurance companies, very often an incident with a patient or the parents or relatives of a patient and the doctor would be resolved fairly easily by the doctor coming out and explaining what happened, and maybe on some occasions actually apologising for what happened. A lot of the insurance companies say that if you come out and apologise, you're admitting liability, and if you admit liability, then your insurance lapses, we won't cover you.
Wow.
So they actually can't do it legally, which then really gets everybody angry and upset.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the problems really begin.
Yeah.
It's the issue, each way you look at it, is like when we come back to the ideas of forgiveness, which is the good old mindfulness letting go stuff. It is on those two sides, is we have to forgive those people that get things wrong. People that get things wrong and don't admit it, then they need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite funny when you see people that have maybe made mistakes in one country can't really get work in this country anymore, so they go to another country and do the same things again, and they've never faced up to what they've done, that kind of stuff. That's not uncommon.
Yeah.
Because there is no, for them at this moment anyway, there's no consequence for action. Yeah. They haven't got to face the consequences of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how you look at life. If you see life as more of an ongoing event, then the ideas of karma come into play. And in that logical or philosophical mindset, then there is no escape. Everyone gets theirs in the end, kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So there is no free lunch, as it were.
Yeah.
But it depends on how you see that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the blog posts I've got listed here, 4 reasons why it's okay to make mistakes. It's a snappy little one, but the 3 other ones are kind of things we've covered already, but the 4th one is that, which I've touched on with my idea about visiting the chap that whacked into me, is that mistakes can create compassion. Like their opportunity to create empathy and compassion.
Yeah. If,
you know, once the dust has settled,
yeah,
and you kind of look at it from the outside.
Yeah.
It's about learning, isn't it? And growing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess in different societies, we have a different idea about what is responsibility. How does that work? In some societies, if you killed the breadwinner in the family, you would take on the responsibility to provide the resources to raise that family.
Yeah.
Because that's the karma of what you've done, it's the consequence of what you've done. You'd have to replace that person.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
Whereas in our, you were saying earlier on that if somebody in our society, if they kill somebody with their car, then the chances are that they might get banned for a year, they might get a fine, or they might get a few months in prison, but that would be it.
Yep.
There would be no real kind of consequence for what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, quite often there's death by dangerous driving and there's death by careless driving, and most judges and juries will go down the careless driving because it's much harder to prove dangerous for some reason.
Hmm.
It's like our laws have been set up to make it go easy on drivers, but at the same time it does frustrate me, like when I see results from cases where people have killed with their cars for whatever reason, whether like on a morning like this, you know, I saw loads of drivers going around with windscreens half covered in ice, and you know, the back, the windows not cleared properly, and snow and ice all over the roof and the bonnet. Just like, what are you doing? You know, you're going to kill someone, and someone was killed like that, you know, very recently. A doctor in London, crossing the road at a pedestrian crossing, was ploughed into by someone who hadn't cleared their windscreen properly. So we're waiting on news of what was going to happen, but it's likelihood they'll get maybe a year's driving ban and, yeah, maybe 6 months in jail. Whereas if they killed them any other way, it would be a much stiffer sentence. But at the same time, ultimately we need people to learn fastest. And obviously, we want these things, incidents, to not happen in the first place.
Mm.
Would a lifetime in prison do the trick? Would that stop people daydreaming while driving? I don't know.
I prefer the idea, and as I was saying on earlier, it's like, okay, that person took out the breadwinner of the family. Yeah. So who's going to raise that family now? And I think the responsibility for the person who's done that is to replace what that person was doing.
Okay, oh, so that's interesting.
For me, the consequence of action should be that they should now be able to fund that family. If the guy's got kids and they would be going to university, then they should become the responsibility of that person to take them through, you know, like to pay the mortgage off, to do all those kinds of things.
That's really interesting, that's quite an interesting way of looking at it. So if I'd been mowed down in that incident and killed, the chap that killed me would have been responsible financially perhaps
for your children,
meagre income for the next 10-15 years.
And maybe that would mean in some cases that the person who was the perpetrator would maybe lose their house, or as that money was used to provide what they'd just destroyed.
Mm.
And to me, that would be a real consequence.
Yeah, and a proper taking responsibility for what you've done.
Yeah.
Not just sticking someone in jail for a couple of years and saying, all right, it'll be okay when he comes out.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. That.
Yeah, because then you do have to be very aware of what you're doing, because whatever you do, you will have to take responsibility for.
Mm.
I mean, in some places where I work, if you're caught stealing, they chop your hand off, you know, which is pretty dramatic, and I guess would probably make you think twice about stealing again. And it also publicly tells the world who you are and what you've done. It's a bit like, you know, putting someone, giving them a mark on their forehead so everybody would know what they've done forever. But whether that actually helps us as a society.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. That's ultimately we need to find out ways to stop these things in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Someone's stealing because they haven't got any cash, or they're too poor. And what's the reasons behind that? Keep going back to the root cause. What, you know? Why are people checking their phones while they're driving the cars? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why don't we have these special little compartments in our car where you can't activate the car unless your phone is in there and locked away? You know, would that be so hard to do?
Yeah,
probably not.
The other kind of things that I think, which is my radical, this is radical show I'm talking now, is I think that if you claim benefits, which is fine, lots of people do need to claim benefits, I think there needs to be a payback. So the payback would be that you contribute to the community that's paying you the money. By that, I don't necessarily mean that people need to wear orange suits and go litter picking.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying that. But it's like, if you've got a single parent mum who's looking after kids, okay, kids get going to school. Okay, maybe mum now needs to be contributing either maybe to the school or maybe helping in the community with older people or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that there is not a sense of punishment, a sense of kind of inclusion.
Involvement.
And so that it's not like you become stigmatised as someone who needs to have benefits, but each according to their need, you know, that you participate in society as well.
Yeah, and from that process you would learn, that person would learn about, you know, oh, I really enjoyed working at that school, or that was brilliant doing that, I don't know, litter pick event with that or the other. I'd like to pursue a career in this or that.
Yeah,
you could use it as a springboard, couldn't you?
But it's the idea of inclusion and involvement. When you see the prisons, and like I say, having worked in the prison service, and you exclude people from society, because that's the other thing. I think that if you put people in prison, I don't think that you should put them in prison for a period of time. I think you should put them in prison on the basis that they achieve something. So it could be that you imprison some young men on the basis that you can be released when you've passed these examinations.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that then you have to study in prison. So that there's something productive that comes out of the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could be that...
rather than just punishment and... go sit in the corner till you're a good boy. Yeah. That kind of thing.
There was a guy who was an armed robber who got his doctorate in psychology whilst in prison.
Hmm.
I mean, so it can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to get GCSEs. Maybe some of those people would need to learn a trade. So that if the prison became a working community rather than a place of confinement, it's different. Why create a situation where people have got a television and a telephone and all kinds of stuff in their cell? Why not make this an active working community?
Mm.
Yeah, the deal is you don't get time in prison. You have to achieve something before you come out.
Yeah.
So if it takes you 20 years to achieve the task, then you're in there for 20 years.
Mm.
If it takes you 10 years or 5 years or 2 years, you're in there for 2 years.
Yeah, depending on what you've been up to. Interesting that. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, there's a series called Mindhunter on Netflix, which is dramatises kind of some work done by the FBI working with serial killers in like 70s, I think, in America. And it's fascinating. It's based on real cases and... real transcripts of speaking to some of these serial killers. And these are guys, to be fair, that quite often, I think with at least two of them, have not wanted to be released because they've had that awareness that they can't be cured or fixed.
Yeah.
There's one called Ed Kempar, I think. I killed 9 or 10 people, including his mum at the end. And he's really, really intelligent guy. Like the FBI agents that were working with him said that by far the most intelligent inmate they'd ever worked with. You know, and quite actually a joy to speak to. Like they ended up quite enjoying speaking to him because he was a really intelligent guy, but had the realization that he wasn't. Real life wasn't for him.
Yeah, like, don't let me out.
You don't want to let me out. Yeah,
I've seen that in psychiatry where there were paedophiles who knew that they were going to offend. They could feel it coming on, and they're banging on the door saying, let me in, let me in, let me in.
Wow.
And they had that level of awareness. They understood they had a problem, but they understood if they could get into the psychiatry, then they would be safe and everybody else would be safe. You know,
heading things off. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, we better wrap it up. Have you got a resource?
Have I got a resource? Yes, it's an app, which is Forgive for Good. And it's got this lovely system on it, which is called PERT, which I love, which is Positive Emotional Refocusing Technique.
Okay.
Which is fun. And it's a doctor that's done it. So it's a good bit of that. So.
Cool. Mine's a blog post on the Creative Cafe. And it's just a nice, shortish blog post about what to do once you've made a mistake.
All right.
But yeah, I've mentioned Mindhunter as well. If you want some good...
Yeah,
a good serial killer drama. Like, we all love a bit of that, don't we?
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
Right, okay, Sean.
Yeah, great.
More next week.
Yep. See you next week.
Take care.
Okay.
Goodbye. Oh.